You're on 121.5, the emergency frequency.
Welcome to the 21.5 Show, a podcast for professional pilots by professional pilots. Join Dylan and Max, both with experience in flight instruction, the airlines, and business aviation, as they talk to a variety of industry experts, share stories, and have a little fun along the way.
Hey guys, it's Dylan. Welcome to another special episode of the 21.5 Show. We're back to bring you more important information during these uncertain times. Unfortunately, Max chose a pretty inopportune time to lose his voice. You'll have to suffer through me reading the intros and the outros for now. The listeners have been demanding more from James O'Neill, and we're happy to have him back on the podcast to discuss the rapidly changing landscape for professional pilots. James will be joining us throughout this crisis whenever new information is available, so be sure to subscribe to the show if you haven't already. We know the information is ever-changing and evolving, so please keep in mind that this conversation with James was recorded at 1700 Eastern Time on Monday, March 16th. Before we get to the call with James, we want to recognize our sponsor, Harvey Watt Insurance, who you all know is the largest provider of loss of medical license insurance for professional pilots. In our discussion with James, he stresses the importance of removing uncertainties to make good decisions, and ensuring you're protected in the event of long-term medical loss is one of the best ways a professional pilot can ensure financial stability. Visit harveywatt.com for more information. Okay, Max, we're back again, and we've got James O'Neill on the phone. We need some more of his peaceful guidance.
Yes, not in person, of course.
No. That's right. Very distanced. Welcome back to the program, James.
Thanks for having me. We are socially distancing, I think, is the That's new right. phrase that, mm-hmm. that we're all using.
Fully distanced. So, James, a lot. We talked to you maybe less than 2 weeks ago on a previous episode, and a lot has changed since then, and continues to change pretty much by the hour. So, a lot of pilots are struggling with a lot of questions right now. A lot of uncertainty. A lot of the term you used in the last episode, feeling discomfort. So, this crazy situation that's going on right now. How is this going to affect pilots in the short term and the long term?
Sure. So before I kind of head off into that, I've learned that it is helpful if we disclose that we recorded this on March 16th,
yes,
late afternoon Eastern time. So, and I say that because, you know, there's a lot of folks that are going to be listening to this that are going to have backgrounds in the military, corporate, and airlines. And information is changing very rapidly.
Yeah.
And so I think we have a responsibility to everybody to make sure that, number one, we don't pass any information on that's not verified. And number two, we timestamp the information so people are making solid decisions based on the information, not making decisions based on out-of-date stuff. But nonetheless, you know, we've been getting this question a lot here over the past few weeks. And, you know, the easiest way to kind of frame this is your long-term safety and success really depends on how well you can withstand short and medium term volatility. Right now, there is a boatload of confusion amongst pilots as to what's going on and how that affects them specifically, right?
Right.
And so if we think about it, there's folks that are senior at companies that they didn't plan on being at for a long period of time. We've got folks that are junior at companies they either planned on being at for a long period of time or didn't plan on being at for a long period of time. And we have other folks that are in some form of transition. So when we talk about how this affects you as an individual, it really does vary depending on your personal situation.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it makes sense. And we have talked about that in previous episodes, you know, that stability and the safety net that you have allows you to make those career decisions that sometimes can be uncomfortable, right?
Yeah, that's exactly correct. The other thing that I think is tough for folks to wrap their head around right now is the confusion, And the confusion is coming from really two main sources. The first is there are actually limited facts and they're changing rapidly. Mm-hmm. The second is that there is excessive guessing that is leading to different assumed outcomes.
Yeah.
No, pilots don't do that.
Yeah, we don't do that. There's no rumors or speculation.
No. And to be honest, it's really not just pilots, you know, but just to give you an example, there are folks that are assuming everything from this is going to be nothing, right? Maybe 2,000 or 3,000 people die from this. I've had folks say as high as 1.5 million.
Right.
Right. Now, to be clear, right, I'm not saying that in terms of trying to prognosticate, right? What I'm doing is trying to demonstrate how broad the thought process is right now. Everything from this is basically completely overblown media hype to, you know, thank God I have the bunker and I am leaving my house permanently and moving into it. And when we have rapidly changing facts paired with excessive guessing, that's how you get to fear and uncertainty.
Yeah. That makes sense. And you're exactly right. Like we said, this is March 16th. We're just receiving all of the announcements from the major airlines on the capacity cuts. You know, in the show that Max and I posted yesterday, a lot of the days that they were saying, well, we're going to resume service or do this on this date, that's still a total moving target, I think. So there's just no way to really make any informed decisions when it comes to a lot of the airline stuff, I think.
So when we get rapidly changing facts and excessive guessing, right, we are going to get fear and uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And the uncertainty is going to be around two main areas. The first is, how bad is this going to be? And the second is, how long is it going to last? And the reason why I bring this up is because for everyone listening who is looking at this through the lens of coronavirus, I think they're missing what's actually creating the highest threat for them. And that's the uncertainty. Mm. Now, when I say highest threat, that's of March 16th, right? At, let's call it 5:15 p.m. Eastern time. Okay? If, you know, those things can change with coronavirus over time.
Sure.
But just for the sake of clarity, I went on to the CDC website. They update their statistics every day at noon, and they close out the measurements they update Monday through Friday at noon. And those statistics are closed out 4 p.m. the day before. So as of March 16th at noon, which is when these numbers were published, there are 3,487 confirmed cases in the United States. Of that, there are 68 confirmed deaths. And that's based on 53 jurisdictions, including 49 states, Puerto Rico, D.C., Guam, and U.S. Virgin Islands. So when we look at where is this fear and is this uncertainty coming from, it's people looking to places like China, Spain, and Italy and saying, what is it going to be like here a month from now, mm-hmm. 2 months from now, 3 months from now?
Yeah, that is good perspective.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. That's for sure. And hopefully it's going to be better because – hopefully we've learned something from how those have gone down. You know, we're lucky that we're third or fourth here to be dealing with it, not first.
Yeah. And so Max, you bring up a good point. because it's important to recognize that we don't yet know how well social distancing measures will work, because we're constantly learning about testing procedures. We're learning about social distancing procedures. We don't know how well that's going to work. But what I can say reasonably confidently is that short term, this is going to be very disruptive to business, how we live our normal everyday lives, and it's going to be very uncomfortable.
It already is, I
think. Yeah.
But okay, so we're pretty certain about that. And I would say for the majority of pilots, especially ones that were looking to advance their careers right now, everything's going to be on hold for a while for a lot of our listeners. So we've got a lot of time on our hands. What should we be doing in the meantime while we're in this holding pattern for, you know, weeks, months, who knows how long?
Sure. So there's a few things that have been popping up. So the first one is the immediate short term. So we've had a number of folks that have started reaching out that we've been working with specifically on how do they keep themselves safe at work, meaning if they feel like they need to turn down a trip, how do they do that without risk losing their job? How do they protect themselves financially? And then how do they plan for something like a potential furlough or a potential extended period of time, right? Even if they do maintain their job, maybe they're at severely reduced schedules, right? Okay. So that's the immediate short term that we need to focus on. And the reason for that is because if our personal lives and our family lives are not stable, the rest of it doesn't matter. You're going to constantly be turning around, dealing with significant problems because your because that fear and uncertainty is going to lead to you constantly having to deal with symptoms instead of the actual disease.
Right.
No pun intended. Once we kind of have our minds wrapped around that, what we've been guiding a lot of folks through is how to set up kind of their family meetings with their spouses and asking questions like, what has you stressed? How does that make you feel? What could we do to protect against those fears? And how would taking those actions make you feel? What it does is it allows each of us to get some insight into where is our family emotionally? And is this something that I need to take care of now? Or can I pivot and actually focus on the medium and longer term things that I need to do to keep my family life on track and my career on track?
Okay, that makes sense. So let's say I'm a client of yours. I'm at the bottom of the list at a major airline, and I'm worried, like, man, this could be furlough. When you say making sure your family life's in order, let's role play that for a second. What would that be like?
Sure. So I'll use a real easy personal example. So I got laid off in 2008. 6 months before I got laid off, I was looking at BMWs. Now, thankfully, I didn't get one, right? But what I learned from that kind of experience and what happened afterwards was it's really difficult to make financial decisions when you're under really high stress. So I have an Excel spreadsheet that goes through what my normal budget is when I'm employed. Right, fully employed. So think about if you're an airline pilot, right? And you're crediting on average 95 hours a month. I know Southwest, you guys do TFPs, right? But for argument's sake, let's just use hours per month. So you're crediting 95 hours per month. Okay, so I have a budget for that. My next budget is, what if I go down to min guarantee, right? Or in this case, if they have below what minimum guarantee is, what things do I automatically pull out of my budget without discussion? And then my third is, hey, if I lose my job, what do I need to cut so that I can last as long as possible without having to make a rash decision. Once you get that squared away, and you can do it on a Microsoft Excel spreadsheet, you set up three tabs, right? Normal, reduced, and painful, mm-hmm. right? That gets your life in order so that the short term is secure. And like I said, you can pivot towards a medium and long term. From there, it depends on the background of the individual. So like, for example, we have folks that have either own family businesses, got folks that are nurses that are also pilots, right? So we start to take a look at, hey, if you have some of these other skill sets that are marketable, project management experience, so on and so forth, where would the smartest place to deploy that be? And then from there, if not, we start to take a look at, okay, what other opportunities are there that are not clear, right? So do you try and go to a different flying position? You know, we kind of talked about this in the last episode, but we really don't know where this is going to go with cargo, nor do we know where it's going to go with corporate. So when we tend to have folks that, let's say they were to get laid off from a major airline, they couldn't make it 2 months without pay. Mm-hmm. As painful as it sounds, sometimes it's a better idea to take the voluntary furlough and go to another job where you know where you're confident you're going to be more stable getting pay that will help you survive. You may look back and find out, hey, I didn't need to take the voluntary furlough, but it's much better to look back and go, I didn't need to take the voluntary furlough, than it is to not take the voluntary furlough, lose your job, and find out 2 months later you ran out of cash. I'm right. giving you a pretty much an oversimplified scenario. Everybody's sure. individual yeah. lives are far more complicated sure. than that. But it really is about making sure we have an accurate understanding of what are the existing threats. Of those existing threats that we identify, how many of them are real and how many of them are perceived? So real easy example. Three of us get in an airplane, go flying, right? Plane full of passengers in the back. And we're flying around in moderate turbulence, clear skies, right? Got a bunch of pirates that say, hey, it's going to be moderate turbulence. There's people in the back that think the wings are going to rip off this thing, right? I mean, they're convinced that they are in a life or death situation. You ask for 2 inches of less coffee in there. That way it doesn't spill on you, right? I mean, the threats that we perceive are not always real.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're actually fake.
Sure.
So the first thing we need to do is when we identify those threats is figure out how many of those are real and how many of those are perceived. Then we need to go look, are there any threats that we're missing? Once we get that done, we have a really good starting point to figure out mitigation strategies. Because the idea is to pull as many of those threats off the table as is possible. Sometimes it's easy to do that. Sometimes we have to get really, really creative. The advantage that we have is because we're working with so many people on this, we have a significantly larger bag of mitigation strategies, because it's not just what, you know, us and the advisors that work for us have. It's each individual person, right? We're collecting all that data constantly on how are people mitigating this. Once we mitigate as many threats as possible, then we got to figure out what's left. Hey, man, how damaging is that to you? And then we use that to drive, okay, based on that, what do we do? And so it's a very methodical, it's a very clear process that puts as much control in your hands in an uncertain situation, which is really the best we can do, right? Is make sure that the decisions that you're making are informed. Make sure that you're making the decisions, somebody else is not making them for you, and make sure you're comfortable with what any potential downsides are.
Yeah, it's really all you can do, right? Because you're going to have to make some decisions. So you may as well follow a well-thought, methodical process to arrive at that decision. And I think it work out best, right?
It is. Folks, the uncertainty creates paralysis. And when you get paralyzed, it means that life is going to happen to you. You become less of an active participant in what's happening. But to give you an idea, sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, so if you're a guy at a major airline that's made all these capacity cut announcements and stuff, but nobody's announced any furlough or anything like that, there's also a certain timing to this process, right? Until you have all the available information to then go through that process and arrive at the best decision, right? So how do you tell people when do you time that? I mean, when you've actually been given notice of uncontrollable change in your job situation, or do you try and lead it like you were saying with a voluntary or what?
So there are what we call leading and lagging indicators. And so what we do is work with folks to figure out, hey, based on your situation, if you see this, your threat level just jumped, right? Significantly. And if you see this, your threat level just dropped. Now, those leading and lagging indicators are different for each individual person. You do not want to be making a decision when management calls you up and tells you, hey, we're letting you go tomorrow. You need to have that decision made well in advance of that happening, of, hey, if this happens, here's what I do. And how – look, you're never going to know – nobody can tell you, hey, at noon on next Thursday, this is what's going to happen. When I got my furlough notification, I was in recurrent. We're sitting there, 70 people in a classroom, and all of a sudden you hear about 50 MFs come out at the exact same time. And the reason was because at that time we had BlackBerries, right? But we got an email notification that said we would be furloughed effective this date. The instructor was handing out the recurrent test while that was happening and said, what's going on? And when a couple of guys in the class said, hey, I just got a furlough notification, he went, what? Right? These notifications come out of nowhere and they're usually not coordinated.
Right.
So it's significantly easier if you're prepped ahead of time, hey, if this happens, I'll do this, because you don't waste days, weeks, or months in paralysis going, I can't believe this just happened to me. And then you're behind.
Yeah, makes sense. So moving on to the medium and longer term strategies on what you should do. If you've got your house in order, so to speak, what are some of the considerations you look at?
So when you talk about the long-term stuff, what do you mean?
Let's say you're going from here to 65, I guess, longer term.
Yeah, so that's a really great question. So I'm going to use an example that probably a lot of the military listeners are going to latch onto. You don't really worry about the trend of your 401k when someone's shooting at you.
Yeah.
So the higher threat the situation, the narrower the focus. There's too much instability right now to think 20, 30 years out.
Yeah.
And so what we really need to do is right size what we're determining as short, medium, and long term.
Okay.
And the reason for that is because, real easy example, right? 2 weeks ago, if you said to somebody, would you rather be a senior ultra low cost carrier captain or a 777 captain at, I don't know, American, the answer may have been different, right? You know, these guys that are 60, 61, 62, they had a projection of what their retirement was going to look like. I guarantee it's a little bit different right now. Based on what's happened in the stock market and now what companies are starting to offer. And so if we start focusing too far out, it'll actually enhance the paralysis. Mm. And you'll start to watch people, they can't make, they start taking massive short-term losses because they're trying to preserve long-term upside that is now doesn't exist the same way it did 2 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks ago. Mm.
Okay. So when you're talking about focusing on medium and longer term, what are the time horizons that you would be focusing on with your clients?
Sure. So it depends on how much cash they have. Take two different pilots, right? One has zero debt, everything's paid off, right? There are certain opportunities they can take advantage of or different risks they can take that are really acceptable risks. And so when we're talking about medium or long term, we may be talking 2 or 3 years out. Mm. If we have somebody, I had someone the other day that we were coaching, senior regional captain, got an offer from a legacy airline, right? Legacy goes, hey, we're still going to be doing classes, your option, whether or not you want to show up to it or not. And we won't hold it against you if you don't come. Right? Well, first question is, if you go to that legacy and you get laid off, how long can you make it? He goes, I don't know, a month and a half. Okay. Well, long term for him is 2 months. You know, so the definition of short, medium, and long term really changes depending on your situation. And that's why when we get into these coaching sessions, we are so methodical in the questions that we ask. Because if we don't fully understand your situation, we cannot give you good guidance. And the problem with the do-it-yourself is if you miss something, it's really like, imagine if you miss something and you take a voluntary furlough or don't when you should have, you can't backtrack on that decision and go, oops, you know, it's done. And a lot of folks are likely going to have to start speeding up their decision-making over the next couple months, depending on what happens, because there are going to be opportunities in this. We just don't know what those opportunities are going to look like yet.
Right. Well, that's a good segue into kind of the next thing I wanted to ask you about. At some point, we're going to come through this and the opportunities are going to become available. So what should we be doing right now to be getting ready for those opportunities?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things. And it's really important to remember that when this does end, and it will, the stock market cannot go up forever, and it cannot go down forever. When this ends, there's still going to be a shortage of pilots. And so things like making sure your logbook is in order. And there's a lot of folks that probably haven't touched a logbook in 4 or 5 years. Making sure your resume is up to date, should you need to use it, right? These are insurance policies. Nobody buys insurance for their car because they plan on wrapping their car around a tree. They buy it in case something happens that they didn't expect, right? So if you update your logbooks and get your resume squared away, if you need it, you have it. And if you don't, great, it's still sitting there.
Right.
Get a copy of your training records. Having that with you, right? Once again, if you don't need it, you just sit it in a folder someplace. But if you do, you can expedite moving through someone's hiring process by having that. We're big advocates of LinkedIn. It's both an active and a passive network, meaning you can go out and search for people, but people can also come and search for you. So making sure that that's optimized, that you have the language written correctly, that you have the settings set correctly, means you now have a two-way process going where you're looking for people and they're looking for you. And the second is you really want to start warming your network up. So when I say warming your network up, right? Anybody listening, right, has the potential to end up out of this completely fine and unscathed, but it doesn't mean one of their buddies isn't going to get hurt or isn't going to get affected by this. So when you're warming up your network, right, number one, when we get into uncertain times, people get real open to reconnecting. And they're real open to reconnecting because nobody knows who's going to be in a situation to help who or need to ask for help from someone. And so there are some techniques that we can use to start to warm that network up. But now's the time to start doing that because you don't know if there's somebody you're going to be able to help or if there's somebody out there that's going to be willing and or able to help you.
That's a great point.
So when you're dealing with uncertainty, right?
Yeah.
One of the things they used to train special forces types is they put them in situations of high uncertainty. And it can actually be really simple, right? I can go, hey, Dylan and Max, we're going to go out for a run. And if I don't tell you how long the run's going to be, what the terrain's going to look like, or how fast we're going to run it, that's going to create a lot of anxiety for you. How do you know how to pace? How do you know how to prepare? If I run too fast too early, I could run out of energy. That's why you find people buying toilet paper, right? No, it is.
Lots and lots of toilet paper.
And if I don't run, you know, if I'm only going to run a mile, right, let's get it done. Put somebody in a corner, right, and, you know, start flicking them. And have another guy sitting in a corner with a sledgehammer tapping it on the ground, right? It creates discomfort and uncertainty because you don't know, hey, man, how painful is this going to get and how quick is that pain going to ramp up? And military folks that have gone through survival training understand this because that's what they do. That's how they strengthen their resiliency is they put them consistently in situations where you don't know what the outcome is going to be. A bunch of folks now are in a situation where they don't know what the outcome is going to be. They don't know, is this going to be bad? Is it going to be nothing? Am I prepared, underprepared? Am I overprepared? That creates a lot of stress and anxiety. And so focusing on threats and mitigating those threats and then shifting your focus onto other things like getting prepared with resumes, warming up your network, right? It's a healthy distraction that has you doing something productive that if something bad were to happen, you're ready. And if nothing bad happens, you wasted time reconnecting with a buddy, right? Yeah, right? Like what's the downside to that?
Sure.
Yeah, that's really good perspective. Well, James, I think we're going to be talking to you a lot here in the coming weeks. We know there's probably a lot more news that's going to be in the pipeline. We want to be the source for our listeners to find a place to turn to in these uncertain times. You know, I think your point about looking at the facts and separating that from the rumors and the fear is probably one of the most important messages.
Yeah, and one of the things that we're going to be real careful about each time we update folks, which look, every time something major changes, which right now could be every day, could be once a week, right? We'll have one of these updates where we get on and we talk about it and we help folks understand what does this mean for them. But a couple of things. We need to be real careful about what information we are sharing as a air quotes fact, right? And I say this because when we're talking with our buddies in the crew room or in the FBO, we need to be really careful not to spread rumors because what we're doing is kicking the anxiety up of people around us in a way that's not helpful, right? No different than walking into a crowded movie theater and screaming fire, right? What we're doing is we're getting people very excited because they think there's a high threat situation. So when we're sharing the information, we want to make sure what we're sharing is facts. And if it's not a fact, at least label it. Hey, heard this, it's unconfirmed, not sure if it's true, right? So that we can try and share information that keeps us all collectively safe without inciting fear, inciting panic, right? That's going to kind of push folks to make decisions that may not be in their best interest.
That's really well said.
I think that's great advice. And that kind of mirrors what a lot of the official union communication or the company communication to big airlines where they're like, listen, don't believe anything unless you hear it from an official source, of which really there's only two, either us or your union. And so, but that being said, the rumors still ran rampant. And I get texts, all, you know, we're parking all the jets tomorrow and, you know, flight attendants have got the virus, and so now they're going to shut the whole airline down. I mean, everything you could think of has come across in the last 2 days. It's hilarious. But
yeah, and so when folks find themselves kind of consuming this information, which once again, right, like limiting your cable news, you don't have to eliminate it, but limit it, right? Reading your news instead of watching it on TV so you don't have them, you know, changing the music in the background, kicking your, you know, fight or flight response up, right? But when someone passes information, and so this advice is extraordinarily simple to say and very difficult to enact, which is when someone gives you information that kicks your stress level up, take a moment to ask, where did you get that from? And go independently look it up yourself. It may only take 30 extra seconds. May take a minute, may take 10 minutes, but we need to be real careful that when we're making decisions, and this is what we're doing with everybody that we're coaching right now, which is why we're constantly staying in contact with them and we're constantly sharing information from multiple sources to make sure that when somebody shoots us a piece of information, we don't disseminate it until we've checked it. That until you verified that information, don't commit to a decision that may harm you long term.
So another really interesting source to get quick news is Twitter. And I think I know a lot of people are going to laugh like I did the first time my cousin told me that. But it really is, because you get it a lot of times, information straight from the source without being filtered through news networks and everybody else. A good example of this was today. We had a text thread going on about, with all of our college buddies that are pilots, about the government shutting down and, you know, locking everything down and instituting mandatory quarantines, at this rumor that's going on. And one of our buddies sends a screenshot from the White House's verified Twitter account and just says, the government is not locking down. This is a text rumor that's been going around. And it pretty much squashes it right there. And so a lot, and even with like our union, a lot of times the first time you'll hear something is through their Twitter feed and things like that. So I've found that, and I've actually started relying on that a lot more recently for good, you know, quality news straight from the horse's mouth a lot of times.
Yeah, making sure you know the source of the information is key. I can't tell you how many folks we've talked to in the past week that have gone, XYZ has just shut down training. And then you go straight to the horse's mouth and you go, are you guys still training? And they go, yeah, why? I mean, we're making adjustments, we're slowing these things down, but no, nobody's been let go from class. And then, you know, when we go back and go, well, how do you know that? Oh, it's been verified information. My buddy was in the class. What class is he in? They come back and they go, oh, it turns out it was my buddy's buddy's buddy, and he was wrong. You're like, okay, now imagine if we, right, because we pride ourselves on being a source of accurate information, imagine if we disseminated that out, right? And I know everybody here doesn't, you know, doesn't own a company, but if you think of yourself as your own little media company, right, every time you repeat something, you're potentially changing somebody's decision-making and thought pattern. So if we could just all take a deep breath, take a step back, and at least preface it with, I heard this, but I don't know if it's true. You don't have to stop sharing the information. Just add in the disclaimer. I'm making this up. you know, earlier, like I said, this is straight from the CDC website. You know, I'm quoting an official source, not kind of grabbing off my, you know, I heard.
Right. Well, that's what we like to do best. I think for most pilots that I know, it'd be better if they just actually said what is actually verified that they say, because it's probably so little.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, the other hand, we've had clients that, and this is kind of the value that we're able to bring is, you know, we have clients that are shooting us direct messages that are saying, hey, look, this came from this source. This is exactly what they said. This is exactly what they're telling us, right? Now, when we get that from three people within 30 minutes, and it's the exact same message from the exact same source, well, now I can confidently say, hey, look, we received this information, received it on this date, we verified it by four different people, stay tuned, this may change. Mm-hmm. But as of this, that's why, like I said, at the beginning of the podcast, this is the date and time we recorded this. And as of that date and time, everything we're telling you is true. You know, it's like I said, empathy is going to go a long way here. And the more we can do to kind of help each other out, and we certainly don't want to avoid talking about what's going on, but we want to be responsible about how we talk about what's going on.
I have a question. So why do you think that we heard from all of the legacy carriers so quickly about these capacity reductions and everything else, and we haven't heard from Southwest, JetBlue? Well, JetBlue actually made an announcement, I think. Spirit, Allegiant, like everybody else. Why has it kind of been crickets for those guys?
Yeah, so number one, it's hard to communicate accurately quickly. And so each company has their own internal process for how they communicate, and some are just better at it. The second factor that you have to look at is, depending on how it's affecting their business, right? That boardroom may be a little more, I don't know if busy is the right word, right? Meaning if they're looking at opportunities where they can redeploy assets and try and avoid a downside, they're going to focus on that over communicating. And I know that's tough, right? Because when you're the one in the trenches being affected by it, you're like, just tell me something. And I'm not excusing the lack of communication. It's just, it's very tough to communicate accurately, quickly.
Well, I think part of it too is that those guys have a lot more exposure because of their international network. So they know they have to cut hard and fast, whereas everybody else, I think, is kind of watching the numbers wind down domestically And really, nobody knows exactly what to do because the million-dollar question, which they were just asking the president an hour ago on that press conference, is how long do we see this lasting? And all that depends on how well everybody adheres to these social distancing protocols that they just issued and everything else. But, you know, he was saying July, August, if everybody are good citizens and follow these guidelines.
Even but, that, though, I mean, you could say.
Yeah, but just, it was so fluid. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It just seems like a really tough thing to be making these calls, too.
Well, I'll give you a really good example. So I went out food shopping last night because I genuinely, other than salt and pepper, had nothing. Because that's how much of a doomsday prepper I am. So I bought 2 days worth of food, so I'm stocked. And a
couple frozen pizzas, huh? Good for you.
Yeah. So I normally I do self-checkout, but I went through a checkout lane where somebody could swipe my groceries. And the person picked up a...
You know, you pick a great time to really strive for that human-on-human contact, James. That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, trust me, it's going to get great. So the person picks up the meat, right? Straight. They put their hands on the plastic. They swipe it. They then put it in the plastic bag and then lick their hands. And you know how the plastic bags are in a wheel? They licked their hand and opened every bag. Licked their hand and opened. Like licked, open, licked, open, licked. And I went, huh, that's not good. Like my hope for humanity was dramatically reduced. So, you know, that's hopefully somewhat of a humorous story in light of what's going on. But the point is you're right. Like depending on how responsible each of us are in terms of if we feel symptoms, do we self-quarantine, right? Do we socially distance? In the Midwest, in Ohio and Michigan, I know for Ohio, they were shutting down restaurants and bars. You could do takeout.
Right.
I told someone the other day walking around downtown Columbus, if about 2 miles away from the Ohio State University Stadium, you could have taken a nap in the middle of the street, not gotten hit by a car or a pedestrian. You know, so some of these measures may seem extreme, right? But not for nothing. If they stop the spread, then it's really 30 days of really, really, really uncomfortable times. But we kind of all owe each other responsibility of, you know, being responsible with cleaning your hands and not licking your hands and open up a plastic bag, I guess. I don't know.
That's right.
I don't know where that fits on the CDC list of things to not do, but I hope it's pretty high.
I'm sure it's up there.
So your responsibility is to go find a quiet place by yourself, listen to your favorite aviation podcast every few days, and don't spread any rumors, and verify all facts. Well, I think that's a good place to wrap up for today, James. Like I said, We'll have you on the program every time some news comes out. I think it's our responsibility to get that information out to all of the professional pilots out there. If people want to get a hold of you, James, what's the best way to do that?
Sure. So www.ravencareers, RAVENCAREERS.com. Click on the Contact Us button or go to any of our pages at the bottom. It says reach out to us. It gives you direct access to a number of our calendars so they can schedule a time to talk and set up a strategy session or resume rewrite or whatever it is they need to get themselves on track.
Well, always insightful, James. Thanks again for your input and your time, and we will talk to you soon.
Thank you very much. I look forward to talking soon.
All right. See ya.
All right. That's going to do it for this special episode of the 21.5 Show. Thanks so much to James O'Neill from Raven Careers for joining us and giving us his perspective during these uncertain times. All of James' contact information can be found in the show notes or at ravencareers.com. New podcasts will be coming out whenever there's significant news relevant to professional pilots, so be sure to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be posting updates and information on our social media as well. You can find us at 215 Podcast on Instagram and Twitter, and at our website, 215podcast.com. If you have something you want us to cover on the show, hit us up on the socials or via email. It's info@215podcast.com. And now, more than ever, remember, flexibility is the key to air power. See you guys in the next episode.
Yeah, all right.